So I'm going to start tonight's talk with a little bit of a joke. Okay, a rabbi and a cantor are standing in a largely empty synagogue one day, talking mystically about how, given the awesome glory of God's infinite divine presence, they're each really nothing. "Yes," says the rabbi, "I am nothing." The cantor also affirms, looking up to the heavens, "Oh, God, I am completely nothing." And they go on like this for several rounds. "I am nothing. I am utterly nothing." Meanwhile, the synagogue's janitor is off into the corner on his hands and knees scrubbing the floor. Filled with piety and a fervent spirit, he has all the while been repeating in a gentle voice, "O Lord, you are everything and I am nothing. I am nothing." The rabbi and cantor at one point listen in and after a few moments come to realize what he's saying. At this, the rabbi nudges the cantor and smugly says, "Look who thinks he's nothing." I thought that was a really good lead-in to the topic for tonight, which is spiritual materialism. And I was pretty excited about this topic because I think spiritual materialism is a natural thing to get caught in. And I think each and every one of us at some point may have found ourselves caught in spiritual materialism, and how to recognize when we're caught in it, perhaps. And we can't really break free from it unless we see when we're caught in it. So that's the topic of tonight's. And I just want to tell you that I'm speaking from experience in a lot of this, that I've been caught in spiritual materialism, and I still catch myself from time to time getting over-identified with my accomplishments, and then I have to really see this clearly and let it go. So materialism, to begin with, is an interest in, a desire for, or a preoccupation with things, real or imagined things, that we think will bring us happiness, satisfaction, or will build up our egos. Everybody go like this, right? And when I talk about ego, there are three primary motivations from the egoic realm. And those motivations are to look good. Anybody ever want to look good? Be right. Anybody? No one's ever here wanted to be right, right? Or be in control. We've never done that, right? Yeah. So spiritual materialism was coined by Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, which is kind of ironic, but I won't get into that. Was that a judgmental mind? Maybe it was. Anyhow. So, you know, I think it's really important to look at materialism from the three different realms that we can get stuck in spiritual materialism. The first one is physical materialism, right? In the physical realm, the realm of form. And at its most basic level, it's the belief that our possessions or our things or our whatever we've accumulated, these possessions can release us from suffering, can bring us more happiness and joy, can make us seem more special in some sort of way, right? In the Buddhist view, the Buddha talked about physical possessions and that we need to have physical possessions. We need to have money, especially as lay people, to live. And that the more we have, the better karma that we have. But we need to work with them skillfully and not get attached or be clinging to them. In fact, the more money you had, the better karma you had, because then you could give more to your spiritual communities and to your kings and to other poor people around you. So that's a Buddhist point of view. But it also, in the Buddhist point of view, it can bring temporary happiness. Right? It can bring temporary happiness, but not lasting happiness. Our possessions, our money can't bring lasting happiness. Right? In fact, if we get really attached to our possessions, it can cause more suffering in the long run. Because we might get caught in this pursuit of trying to accumulate more, and that it's never enough. We never have enough. I saw this within my own family growing up. I just was very interested. My dad has 8 brothers and no sisters, but anyhow. So he would get a pool, and then all of his brothers would start getting pools. You know, or one would get one thing, and then they all had to start getting this same physical possession. Anybody know what I'm talking about here? It was really interesting. Like, oh, okay, this is, why is everyone having to do this? But you know, there's so much area for misunderstanding when it comes around physical possessions and money. You know, some people believe that because I'm rich, I'm special, or because I have this or that, I am something, right? Or I'm a teacher because I have this diploma. So there's this becoming, this identity that we attach to this possession in some way. And I would say that our society pretty much holds people who are rich with more esteem. Did anybody agree with that? That our society tends to hold people as more special if they're very successful or very wealthy? Which I think is a misunderstanding, actually. I can't tell you how many people say that they voted for Donald Trump because he was rich and successful. I'm not going to say anymore, except that I don't feel that line of reasoning was perhaps my line of reasoning. I'm going to be good today. Yeah. And then there's spiritual materialism in the psychological realm, right? The psychological or emotional realm. It's the belief that a certain philosophy or belief system or point of view, right? This is what we're attaching to, will bring release from suffering or make one more special in some way, or it'll make us happier, right? A lot of people seek a sense of peace and safety and strongly identifying with a particular religion or a group or philosophy or even political party, right? Or viewpoints, particular viewpoints. And this can cause a lot of suffering, this type of psychological materialism in the spiritual realm. If you strongly identify yourself as a Buddhist, perhaps, you might want to look at that and see if you're crossing that line over into materialism or some other label. Perhaps you're collecting, or we're collecting, initiations or accomplishments as far as being whatever it is we're being. And that this is it's not a big deal. We all get accomplishments. I'm not saying it's bad or wrong. It's just when we cross over into the identifying ourselves with this, making us more special, or that this is going to bring us happiness because we've gotten this special accomplishment, right? And the danger is that it can help further solidify our sense of self, which is a problem when we start to do this practice. We see that rigid identification and clinging to the sense of self causes so much pain and suffering. And if we're wanting to become released from this stress, we're going to lighten our hold onto anything that's strengthening the sense of self. I know one teacher in our tradition that I've spent time talking to, who was telling me how many retreats she's been on, how many teachers she sat with, and how many days she's been on retreat over the past 20 years. And I was like, how does she know this? I haven't been paying attention. I have no clue. But part of me was like, this sounds kind of like spiritual materialism, perhaps. I don't know. Yeah. So here's, I'm a Arab. I was raised Arab, born Arab, and Muslim, was raised Muslim. And one of the things that we say in Arabic a lot, all my family says it, is Inshallah, which means God willing. And Allah is God. So, you know, this past weekend we had a family gathering and I went to my aunt. I said, "You look so healthy and well." And she said, "Oh, thank you, Inshallah." You know, and "Oh, I hope you stay well and you do well." "Oh, thank you, Inshallah." You know, so everything's everybody's saying, "God willing, God willing." So here's a story. It's a Sufi traditional tale. The poor mullah Nasruddin had been saving his money for a long time to buy a new shirt. At last he had enough, and full of excitement, he went to the tailor shop to place his order. The tailor took the mullah's measurements, and that completed told him, "Excuse me, come back in a week, and inshallah, God willing, your shirt will be done and waiting for you." Nasruddin, kept keeping to this agreement, returned to the hour 1 week later and asked for his new shirt. "Ah, something has come up," the tailor informed the poor mullah. "Your shirt is not yet finished, but inshallah, God willing, tomorrow your shirt will be ready." Nasruddin dutifully returned the next day. "Oh, I'm sorry, mullah," the tailor apologized, "but it's still not quite done. Try again tomorrow, and inshallah, God willing, it will be ready." So then Nasruddin said, "How long then will it take if you leave Allah out of it altogether?" Yeah, so here's some of this, you know, materialism perhaps coming out with the whole Allah thing. So spiritual materialism is also the belief that a certain temporary state of mind or spiritual experience that we have is going to be a refuge from stress and suffering. It's going to bring lasting happiness and satisfaction. We're never going to be stressed out or upset ever again, and we'll be living in a perpetual state of bliss. Anybody wish for that? How realistic is it? No, right? You know, an example of that would be people coming to meditation practice hoping to recreate or manifest this perfect, peaceful, calm state of mind, or using drugs and alcohol or other things that we use in order to get a euphoric state of mind. So there's this craving, there's this desire for a specific state. And as we know, this is a setup for disaster, because all states of mind and heart are temporary. They come and they go, they're here for a short period and then they leave again. So attempting to maintain a specific or particular state as a refuge from suffering and constantly pursuing it. Some people want to be in love all the time. I had a friend, you know, a lot of people, they fall in love. I mean, we know this is a temporary state. It's a bunch of, what are they called, hormones? Surging through our body. Eventually these hormones calm down and that wonderful, blissful state is going to not be as exciting as before. But as we know from Buddhism and what this practice, mindfulness practice, teaches us, that all these states are temporary, they come and go. And some are pleasant, some are unpleasant, and some are neutral, right? And that our job is not to cling to them or try to create only pleasant states, but how we hold them when they arise. Can we be with each state with equanimity? Of course, the pleasant ones are a lot more pleasant, so we might have preferences for them, but we try not to cling to them. So back in the day, in Buddhism, the monks who did a lot of jhana practice, some of the monks got to have some pretty mystical powers. Like some had ESP, some had psychic powers, some could actually float up into the sky, walk on water. So there's all kinds of stories of different magical things that they could, some of them, not all of them, got these powers, but they're pretty well known that you can get these powers even today if you do a lot of deep jhana practices. And the Buddha, there was this group of people coming from the town wanting the monks to prove that they were enlightened and asking them to do magical powers. So these monks found themselves showing off what they could do in order to prove that they were, you know, legitimate. And then when the Buddha found out about this, he forbade all of his monastics for doing anything, for showing off any of their magical powers, because he said it only strengthened the sense of self. He also told people to not get caught up in rites and rituals. That's in one of the lists, not to get caught up in rites and rituals. And I think the Buddha was saying, don't get caught up in spiritual materialism. Don't do things that are going to strengthen the sense of self, strengthen the sense that you're special or that this is special or that we're more special than anyone else. Our society is filled with spiritual materialism, bordering on narcissism, spiritual narcissism. The attempt to build up our list of credentials and accumulated teachings in order to present oneself as more realized or a holy person. A lot of people ask me, well, you've been to Thailand, right? Or have you been to Sri Lanka even? What about India? Have you been? And I'm like, no, I'm homegrown. I did all my practicing in the United States. And they look at me like, well, can she really have wisdom? She hasn't gone to one of these countries, right? But there's a very fine line between narcissism on the spiritual path, narcissism and a spiritual path. We can easily, so easy to get to cross over. And I think that's why the Buddha used to tell his monks, his teachers, to the very first teaching to give all of the lay people was on generosity. Because he said if the people didn't have generosity, a generous heart, an open, generous heart to begin with, they can't get these teachings. Well, I truly feel that he was saying we have to learn generosity first, because is generosity focusing on ourselves? No, it's focusing on who we're giving to, right? We're opening our hearts and making something more important than ourselves. And once we get ourselves out of the way, once we open our hearts to other beings and become generous, then we can start really opening with generosity to our own practice and not get stuck in this trying to fill up the self through spiritual practice. So generosity was a really important practice in Buddhism. So when I first started on the spiritual path, I was meditating. It was an important thing that I did, but I also got some pretty good psychic skills going, psychic abilities, and I really got caught into this spiritual materialism. Started running around doing psychic readings for for all my friends and family, and yeah, I don't want to just tell you how ugly it got. But it got pretty ugly. Anyhow, and then I started realizing how much I was suffering. Because my ego was trying to prove, you know, all these new special powers that I had. And it was really stressful. So I finally got to the point where I wouldn't talk about any of it at all. And then I quit practicing any of that. To this day, I usually don't go around talking or doing these things because I don't want to be building up the ego, you know, the spiritual materialism that happens. But during this time when it was really ugly, I was reading probably hundreds of spiritual self-help books. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Right? And boy, was I getting some really good spiritual concepts down. I was learning how to hone my powers and skills. I was learning how to yuck it up with everyone about spirituality. And I did this for a while, this obsession with spiritual self-help, until I realized one really important thing. I wasn't becoming more free. Right? I was still suffering. So all of these hundreds of self-help books, sitting around with all these hundreds of different people yucking it up, and I still wasn't free from stress. So I thought, okay, something's not quite right here. And then I found the Buddhist path. Yeah, but there are a lot of people, they go to... You know, I'm speaking from my own personal experience. I was a spiritual seeker. And the spiritual seeking run around from one spiritual event to the next, from one modality to the next, trying to acquire more spiritual experiences, more spiritual knowledge. And what I was doing was I was skimming the surface in all these different modalities. And I wasn't able to go deep in any particular one. Right, and then I realized I had to dive deep into one modality, really go for it, and quit acquiring spiritual knowledge from all these different areas, because all it was knowledge. It wasn't translating into freedom in this being. Most people get caught into that in this when we first start out in the spiritual realm. We skim the surface. We're tasting but not swallowing and not digesting. And things are going along great because we have all this knowledge. We're having fun with all these new friends. Yay! Things are going awesome until something really stressful happens. And then we realize that we don't have the fortitude or the tools to work with this really stressful situation. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? I know that I'm going on dangerous territory here. I'm like, yeah. But as Americans, you know, in this particular culture, we're conditioned to acquire, to be busy, to accumulate, to try different things, to strive for what we want, you know. And it's because of all of this, it's so easy to get stuck into this racing to and fro and seeking and spiritual materialism, basically. Sampling different items on the spiritual buffet. Yeah. There are wealthy spiritual leaders and teachers who charge thousands of dollars for retreats. Anybody been on one? Are you willing to admit it? Yeah. Awakening. For so much money, you can awaken this week. Right? Or if not awaken this week, you can at least get what you need to awaken. You know, in Buddhism, it tends to be different. You know, most retreats you go to, you can get a scholarship or hope to get a scholarship. Or at least ask for reduced prices. My friend David Schweitzer is the president of our nonprofit board. He used to be in the Hindu tradition, the yoga tradition. And he says that he stayed in that tradition for about a decade until his Hindu showed him all the Mercedes and all these amazing cars and mansion. And the guy was getting really wealthy. And then he decided that maybe something's not quite right here with this whole... So he left because of that. Then in the spiritual, I'm just going to go deeper into this hole. Here I go, I'm about to dive into this hole. Hate me if you may, but... there are all these spiritual teachers out there right now in our world that are teaching us that we can manifest whatever we want. Anybody heard this? Anything we want, right? All we need to do is follow their formula. We put it out there. We focus on it. We focus on what we want to the point of obsession. Right? We have to be happy and positive every second of every day. Right? And then we take a few really considered steps towards getting what we want. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Right? And I just want to say that we are creative beings, and we are manifestive, creative beings, and we can manifest a lot of what we want in our lives. We focus on something, we take action towards it, we get our degrees. It's a good chance we can succeed in certain areas. But to manifest anything and every single thing we've ever wanted, this is kind of bordering on the magical. I believe that this kind of thinking can be really dangerous. And it can be going over that line again into spiritual materialism, because it can lead us to superficiality, to being inauthentic. Do we feel happy every minute of every day? You know, so if I'm pretending to be positive and happy all the time, I'm being inauthentic, right? It can lead me to trying to control, to manipulate, and spiritually bypass any unhealed inner pain that needs to be healed or looked at. It also promotes the second noble truth in Buddhism, which is the cause of suffering is,
desire.
Yes, desire, craving, tanha, wanting, clinging. So if we have to just want something to the point of obsession, we are actually strengthening our potential for future suffering, for this craving. And then when the results don't come, you know, that we've been focusing on manifesting and really putting a lot of energy in, then that sets us up to beat ourselves up. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Oh, so I must have done something wrong because it didn't work for me. Yeah. But then if we do manifest it, if it does come to being because we put a lot of concerted effort into it, then it sets us up to patting ourselves on the back and saying, okay, I'm special. I was able to manifest this. Right? So this, we're going again into spiritual materialism. This is a delusion. This is a misunderstanding. This Oprah Winfrey, she says, some of the new American spirituality throws common sense out of the window and pursues a search for magic cures and miraculous people. The need to believe in all-powerful teachers, angelic visitations, UFOs, and other unexplained mysteries can obscure the ordinary magic of everyday life. Proof enough of God and the miracle of life. So I'm not saying that unexplained mysteries don't happen. I'm not saying that we don't have, you know, amazing abilities to heal and be healed. But this search and this clinging and this craving for the magic and the mystery, and it's an attempt to escape our lives sometimes. So it's really important for us to look at the motivation. What is the motivation for wanting this magic, right? And then the people who are supplying the magic, the teachers, the presenters, when everybody starts treating them like they're something special, really special, it sets them up to thinking that they're more special than other people. And then they might have a misunderstanding that I'm better than or more special, and then they'll start abusing their power. Do you know what I'm saying? So we've heard many, many examples of this happening. And that's a cause of spiritual materialism. So whenever we argue over, promote, or cling to any belief or experience, when we're stuck in a rigid conceptual place, we are stuck in spiritual materialism. I was talking to Paul earlier today about this topic. And this is really important distinction to get, that when we're fully present, we're here in this moment, there's this bare experience. Like right now, we can hear the heater. Perhaps you can feel the air on your exposed skin. People are moving around you in your visual field. So there's this bare experience that happens, right? This is mindful awareness. This is what we're practicing to bring more of into our lives, this bare experience. And then the mind grabs hold of this bare experience and goes into the conceptual realm. It starts trying to identify and categorize and compare and contrast this experience to other experiences. Then it says, oh, I'm special because I had this fear experience. Then we have these insights and we're like, oh, I had this insight. Let me go tell everyone about my insight. So then the conceptual world, the conceptual thinking, the mind is what creates and puts us over into the spiritual materialism. So it's really important for us to constantly be monitoring our conceptual, how are we processing our experience? Are we building our ego up, our self up? Are we building someone else's self or ego up as more important than anyone else? Because you know what? We're all special. We're all equally important. We're all have Buddha nature. Right? So there's no one person that's more magnificent or special than anyone else. We're unique and we're special. And the biggest problem with spiritual materialism is when we're seeking outside of ourselves in this conceptual world to be special, we're totally missing out not only on how we are special in the internal world, but we're also bypassing what's underlying this desire, which may be some major fear that we aren't special. You know, a lot of us deal with feelings of inadequacy, right? So we need to go there and heal and work with those feelings of inadequacy and not act them out by bypassing it into a spiritual materialistic endeavor. So it's all about letting go of control, letting go of the self, letting go of identification, and letting go of needing to amass spiritual accoutrements. Yeah, that doesn't mean that we won't get spiritual accoutrements or insights, but letting go of the need to have them. And becoming the Buddha or the modest or humble Jesus without anyone needing to know that we are. Here's a poem called Infinitive. We make too much history. With or without us, there will be silence and the rocks and the far shining. But what we need to be is, oh, the small talk of swallows in evening over dull water under willows. To be, we need to know the river holds the salmon. And the ocean holds the whales as lightly as the body holds the soul in the present tense. In the present tense. So thank you for listening, your kind attention.